You are listening to Episode 7, Part 6 of Chapter 1 in A Course in Miracles. Welcome, Miracle Makers. This is Angie, your host of Singularity, a podcast where we will journey together through various sacred and inspired texts, remembering our truths along the way. Thank you for being a part of my journey and for allowing me to be a part of yours. Go ahead and grab your coffee. Have your pen and paper handy and the text if you have it. Here we go. Welcome to Episode 7. In the first part of the episode, we'll be covering Part 6 of Chapter 1, Illusion of Needs. The main point I pulled from the text in Paragraph 1 is this. Until the separation, which is the meaning of the fall, nothing was lacking. I want to talk about lack for a moment. This illusion, or this error in our mindset that we are separate, is something we imagined, making it possible. I don't believe that it is the true design of how all of this was or is supposed to work. The idea of separation slows our vibration down, and we exist at a slower pace, literally. As a result of our perceived separateness, we create the illusion of needs. This isn't spiritual propaganda. In a sense, this is spirit science. In biology class, we learn that all living things, systems, organisms, are all in this constant state of achieving homeostasis, like the pull of a magnet toward north. A definition I pulled for homeostasis is this. In a general sense, it is and refers to stability, balance, or equilibrium. Physiologically, it is the body's attempt to maintain a constant and balanced internal environment, which requires persistent monitoring and adjustments as conditions change. All I am suggesting here is, what if emotions are like the mind's version of hormones? They are the mind's way of establishing homeostasis, which, defined in this way, is the mind's ability to psychologically regulate its inner environment to ensure its stability in response to fluctuations in the outside environment, regulating our thoughts back into balance or alignment. Our wholeness restores us to balance, and in that balance, we feel our best psychologically, physiologically, spiritually, and we have everything we could possibly need. We crave the peace, the ease, and the bliss that can come from being in alignment with the whole. It is evident in our society and how we are always trying to fill this perceived void inside us with any and everything. From money, drugs, food, sex, love, in moments like these, when we really think about it, what we are really craving in these endeavors is the creative outlet they supply and the connection that we get from them. So this money or this drug or this love gives me permission to experience an intimacy with this world or these people, and even this intimacy with ourselves that otherwise we feel like we can't reach or deserve on our own. Emotions elicited by our needs, like guilt or desire, are to help us ebb and flow back into our alignment. It is there to provoke or prod us back onto our path, and we sometimes get stuck in these emotions and experience an imbalance of emotion. So when we get stuck in guilt, it could lead us to depression, or if we get stuck in desire, it could lead us to addictions. But too much of any time spent outside of balance creates anxiety. Any and all emotion experienced outside of love stems from needs and this feeling of lack. The Course tells us that before the fall, there were no needs at all and no lacking. So no lack means no needs. But the reverse of that is that lack does in fact create needs. Needs come about when we deprive ourselves. An order of needs is created by us when we do this. We live out from this place of lack. We send out that vibration or expectation, as well as pick it up in our awareness, making it what we notice most, which then strengthens our belief in it. The way that we view ourselves is the same way that we present ourselves. When we see ourselves as lacking, then we act out from this place of not having enough or not having what we need. From this illusion of needs, we create the need for learning because we believe that we do not know our truth, which makes learning necessary. But we can only learn when we open ourselves to it and believe that in some way we need it. When our truth has been remembered, we realize that all we ever lost or were lacking was the memory that we have always known that abundance is ours. Because We are given everything when we are created. Even though we have forgotten, forgiveness realigns us with our truth that spirit within us lacks nothing. When we forgive ourselves, our abundance is remembered, placing our minds back into alignment with the miracle. We perceive with love, and with the atonement, our spirit is set free. Paragraph 2. A sense of separation from God is the only lack you need to correct. Separation is a distortion in our perception where we believe that we are outside of the whole or separate. We see ourselves as divided from the whole. So we literally view ourselves as a fraction, only a portion, or less than whole. Believing we are separate, we respond by creating an order of needs. These needs separating us further as we perceive lack, perpetuating our smallness by dividing ourselves further by creating these levels. The Course calls these levels of perceived lack. Each time we make a new level within us, we create more and more distance between us and the whole. Like in math class, picture a pie, and you see that you have cut a piece of the pie out as yourself, creating that piece as an individual. That now is just a fraction of the whole. Now imagine that small piece that you've taken away from the whole, but you divide that even further into little levels. Each time you divide this, you're creating more and more division within the whole. How do we correct the one thing that needs correcting? How do we put ourselves back together? Since all the lack that we experience stems from the belief of separateness, then when we correct this error in lack, all the other levels will naturally fall away. In math class, we all learned that to undo division, you multiply. So apply the same logic here. When we remember we are whole, our abundance is realized, and then everything around us is multiplied. Undoing the division between us and the whole, we become unified, and once again, we see ourselves as whole. When we unify our needs, this leads us to take unified action, which creates lack of conflict. Unified action is a part of the unified state, because when our wholeness is intact, we remember our part in the universal experience, and taking action is a natural reaction to this. When you unify, you add things together, making unified needs and unified action two positives. And lack is when something is less than or negative. How is it that the sum of two positives is lacking in some way? Well, also in math, we know that when we add two positives, we cannot get a negative. Principles in math also tell us that we can replace the negative with removes. And what we are left with is this. United needs plus united action creates a sum of removing conflict. Well, would you look at that?
Well, would you look at that? Just look at it. Oh, would you look at that?
Paragraph 3. The order of needs requires correction at its own level before the error of perceiving levels can be corrected. So the Course is telling us that there is an order of correction. Step 1, order of needs, needs to be addressed before step 2 can be, because step 2 is a direct result of step 1. So when we feel we have needs or perceived lack or that we are separate from the whole, then we will perceive levels. To correct step 2, we must first understand the function of these levels. Levels give the illusion of up and down. This allows for movement, introducing us to the concepts of space. When we have movement within this space, it opens up the possibility for time. Our belief that we live where there are levels creates space and time. Caught up in the separation, we've lost track of what is illusion and what is reality. Have you ever woken up after a dream and still carry that emotion from it with you, even after you're awake? In this way, we live in this dreamlike illusion where we begin to think that time and space actually mean something, giving them power to limit us. The text tells us here that we cannot behave effectively while functioning in different levels. Well, what does that mean exactly? In reading this, I found that it's because when we think that we are separate, we cannot create at our full potential. And this is why. When we divide ourselves off, becoming a fragment of the whole, the fear and lack we create in doing this allows us to continue the dividing. Fragmenting ourselves further and further into these levels, we are essentially spreading ourselves too thin in spirit, operating from a diluted version of ourselves. In wholeness, we are full versions of ourselves, creating at our full capacity. In order to correct this error, we must first address it at the level that it was created. We must realize it was just a dream and wake up fully before we can separate the false emotion from what is our true reality. Remembering that space and time are meaningless sets us free from the levels as well as our limitations. Paragraph 4. The real purpose of the world is to use it to correct our unbelief. Unbelief is the belief that we are separate. Fear is the glue that holds our fragmented selves in place. Belief is to know or remember that we are in fact whole. Belief produces the acceptance of its existence. We resemble our Creator in thought because, like our Creator, who has perfect faith or a belief in His creations because He created them, we too believe in what we create. The only difference between us as co-creators with our Creator is the content of that which we create. So we created fear, not God, by the unbelief of our wholeness. The purpose of the world is to use it, to unbelieve in our creation of fear, remembering that we are whole, and only from love create with our full potential. Paragraph 5. All aspects of fear are untrue. Believe this and you'll be free. They just simply do not exist at the creative level. Because at the creative level, only perfect love exists, so fear cannot exist. And if we believe this, we will be set free. But are we willing to believe this? To put our creations to the test? To look at them indiscriminately, objectively, and ask ourselves the tough questions. At the extent that we are willing to do this is the extent in which we can raise and strengthen our perceptions, affirming that we are in alignment with truth. The Course provides for us here the truth test. They provided us a truth algorithm, I'm going to call it, made from the laws of our fundamental truth. It's a two-part equation. First part of the equation is this. Perfect love casts out fear. If fear exists, then there is not perfect love. Part 2 of the equation. Only perfect love exists. If there is fear, it produces a state that does not exist. Applying your belief to this algorithm of words, use it to weed out any illusions or false ideas. Sorting out the true from the false is the purpose the Course has given this equation. Using this method will bring any false belief to the surface of our awareness. We can then scoop it out of our belief pool and float freely in truth. The gift, if we choose to open it, is this: faith or trust. Surrendering our minds over to this truth, we will have true perception and realize when we are truly remembering we are whole, knowing how to undo error and how to realign ourselves, and recognizing our truth when we hear it. My truth from the reading is this: lack is the result of the belief that we could live in a world that exists apart from the whole. This world is based on and ruled by fear, and it is a product of our own imagination. Its existence is not even possible because only perfect love exists. This is great news because if we embrace this truth, then we are responsible for the world we create, giving ourselves back the power to do so. Am I ready for that united action and co-creating within this love-based world? Will I be willing to let the idea of self go for the greater good? When we are ready to remember our truth and do our part in this universal experience, we are free to live in our love-based world. Welcome to the second half of the episode. In this section, we'll be covering the workbook lessons for this week. The workbook lessons are here to help us absorb these concepts more so through the application, while the text is here to help us in conceptualizing it. We'll begin with lesson 11. My meaningless thoughts are showing me a meaningless world. The purpose of this lesson is to help us in reversing the thinking of the world. Because we think the world determines what we see, but what it's trying to show us in this lesson is that it is actually our thoughts that determine the world. In this concept lies the key to forgiveness, and from that the foundation for peace, relaxation, and freedom from worry. We are being introduced to the concept of insane thoughts, and that what is producing this world is insane, so is what it produces. It is reminding us that reality is not insane, and that we have real thoughts as well as the insane ones. So we are capable of seeing the real world, if we look to our real thoughts to guide us in our seeing. Lesson 12. I am upset because I see a meaningless world. The purpose of the lesson is to aid us in correcting a major perception distortion. And that is, meaningless is neither good nor bad. A good world implies that there is a bad one, just the same as a satisfying world implies that there is an unsatisfying one. We could be incredibly happy if we could accept the world as meaningless and let its truth be written upon it. The Course tells us that we are impelled, or we are pulled, to define what it is that we would have it be. And that is how we see it. When our words or our definition of what we think the world should be has been removed and we see His instead, that this is the ultimate purpose of these exercises. And we will no longer be upset. I pulled a quote directly from the text because I just find it beautiful, and I think it sums up this lesson pretty well. And that is, "Beneath your words is written the word of God." We are perceiving a world that has no order because it is ruled by chaos, and chaos has no laws and is a result of chaotic thinking. And we cannot live in peace in a chaotic world. And we should be grateful that this world is not real. And the only thing that makes it seem real to us is because we choose to give it value. But we can unchoose to give it value because we know the Course tells us that the totally insane has no meaning. Lesson 13. A meaningless world engenders fear. The purpose of this lesson is that nothing without meaning actually exists. A meaningless world is impossible because nothing without meaning exists. In recognition of meaninglessness, it arouses intense anxiety. In the mindset that we are separate, it opens the idea that a situation could exist in which God and ego challenge each other over whose meaning is to be written in the empty space that the meaninglessness opens. Ego rushes in to establish its own ideas in the empty space because it's fearful that the void may reveal that ego is not real and useless, and this is the only time ego is right. We are to learn to recognize the meaninglessness and accept it without fear. If we co-create the world from fear, then we are creating a world of fear which is not its original nature. Ego feels safe in the illusion because neither are real, creating a false idea of reality for the other. Why we are really afraid here is because our thoughts give value or power to the possibility of a world where enemies and their vengeance could exist. These lessons are to help by giving us a simulation, giving experience to recognizing these fears based on thoughts that have created this false world. So to review, totally insane engenders fear because it is completely undependable, offers no grounds for trust, and nothing in madness is dependable. Because it holds no safety, no hope, such a world is not real. The practice given here is, I have given it the illusion of reality and have suffered from my belief. I choose to withdraw this belief and place my trust in reality. Choosing this, I escape the effects of the world of fear. I am acknowledging that it does not exist. Lesson 14. God did not create a meaningless world. The purpose of this lesson is 1. Show us the reason why a meaningless world is impossible. And 2. Teach us the steps in learning how to go from the false ideas that we have made up that prevent us from seeing the love-based world that God did create. These steps are teaching us to let go of fear-based thoughts and embrace love-based thoughts instead. The Course says that when we do this, that it is the true meaning of salvation. Salvation is when we do not only understand but act out from the understanding that the meaningless world does not exist. To do that, we must realize the following steps. Step 1. Everything that God created is real and eternal and remains untouched by the world we see now. Step 2. If God didn't create it, it cannot exist. Step 3. The fear-based world that was imagined possible by us does not exist, and it has nothing to do with reality. Salvation 101. This lesson tells us that this can be a very difficult process because we are having to let go of our thoughts. The thought that everything we have known or thought about is a lie, all of it. Talk about shocking and feeling this hint of fear rising. It's like the emotional version of having a blanket ripped off of you while you're dead asleep and having a bucket of ice cold water dumped on you. Comparing it to that, that confusion that when you have to process very quickly before you realize what's happening, where you are, and if you're safe. And that way, we can see that confusion can actually be quite uncomfortable and would seem almost counterintuitive for us to purposely place ourselves into that state. This is what makes it difficult. Like standing at the edge of the high dive for the first time, those moments before you jump into the pool, suddenly the water doesn't seem so inviting. The thought of jumping off seems scary. We feel very unsure, but somehow or somewhere inside of us, we want to jump. We know it's safe. These emotions as we teeter at the end of the board are horrifying, yet at the same time exhilarating. And the Course is telling us to trust our truth and knowing that love-based thinking is more than safe. It is our birthright and that it can actually be euphoric. In doing so, it will catapult us toward perfect safety and perfect peace. How do we start to shed the old thoughts? 1. See the words of God instead. 2. Take the world you see now, the horror that may be your own personal fears, those that could happen to you or to someone that you love. Name that disaster specifically, and then essentially look your fear in the face and shine your light of truth on it. Expose it for what it is. 3. While doing this, say your truth like a mantra. What God did not create is not real. The fear of seeing your worst fear so intimately can be horrifying. Remember, you will not get stuck there. Once you go beyond the fear, you will find perfect safety was always there, and you will be washed with peace once you are reunited with your whole self, realigned with your truth. This sounds very much like what most parents tell their children to do when they're afraid of the boogeyman. I find it a testament to the fact that the universal truth absolutely exists. How else is it possible for so many different generations and cultures of people to approach overcoming fear with the exact same message that the Course is telling us here? To review, the fear-based world we experience is not even real. 2. That love-based thoughts are always with me. They are written in my mind because He created it with me. 3. Why should I suffer the effects of my own insane thoughts when perfection of creation is my home? 4. Know the power of your decision and remember your true reality is love. Lesson 15. My thoughts are images that I have made. This lesson is the intro to the process of image making. The purpose of this lesson is that what I think I am seeing is not actually seeing, it is image making. The function we have given to our eyes is image makers. They are not actually seeing. Living in this fear-based world, we think from this place. The lessons are calling them insane thoughts. We know too that anything outside of the love-based world isn't real. So we are having these false thoughts that appear as images that we think are real because we thought them, we think we see them. This is how the way that we see things was made. This takes the place of seeing, replacing vision with illusions. How do we know when we have reached the beginning of real vision? 1. You have begun to understand it when you have seen little edges of light around the same familiar objects which you see now. Real vision comes quickly after this. The lessons tell us that we may have many light episodes and that they may come and take many different forms and that some are unexpected, but to not be afraid. To review, whatever I see reflects my thoughts. 1. My thoughts tell me where I am and what I am. 2. If we are seeing a world where there is suffering, loss, and death, then what we are really seeing is a representation of our insane thoughts, and I am not allowing my real thoughts to cast their light on what I see. The lesson tells us to know this. 1. God's way is sure. 2. Images cannot prevail because it is not my will that they do. And 3. My will is His will. In this episode, we have covered a lot of subjects. We've talked about homeostasis and algorithms, and so I just can't leave without having some terminology from our English class. So I will end with our one-sentence summary. This complete concept is courtesy of Buckminster Fuller. Imagine if God wasn't a person, place, or thing, but rather an action like loving or creating. With your coffee still warm and your notes fresh, take this time now to go inward. Aligning yourself with your truth, take it with you into the week. Until next time, keep shining.